Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. Welcome to Masterclass. It is December 22nd. Where has this year gone? I swear to God, I just said that last year and it was December. I turn around and a whole year has gone by again. But we are here to showcase our interns and what they have to present for us. I love this showcase. We didn't start it until about 6 months ago, and I really, really, truly enjoy this. You all will too. And with that being said, Jane, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, take it away.
Okay, let me get my screens together here. Hold on. As I said, I was ready. Okay. Which one is it? This one. All right. All right. I'm going to put my sales voice on. Y'all get ready. All right. I said that in it. All right. If you are at the latter part of the whole millennial line, then you have a teenager or two who says you grew up in what they call, I quote, the late 1900s. Just think about how crazy that sounds to say. Now, are they wrong? Not really. Regardless of their unintentional shade, we can all agree that there are so many things to learn from each generation, even if we're reluctant to admit this. So capturing what we know and have learned is important to pass on, not only to our children, but for our generations to come. Today's topic is going to dive into the very endeavor, capturing what we know today through what is known as digital collections. In the next slides, you'll learn more about what exactly digital collections are, how we capture the objects of the collections, and inexpensive ways to do so, as well as the highlights and the benefits of having a digital collection. We do need to know where technology comes from, and depending on where you came into the tech world, you may be at somewhat of a disadvantage. There are components of technology that we just read about in some tech blogs or on a YouTube video. Here are some examples above: the house phone, my kids had no clue about, by the way, and you'll see that later in the slide. The camera that I'd estimate is probably about 10 pounds or more. I might even be way off, but I've never seen this in real life, only in movies. The Microsoft Surface is a newer technology at the present, but just think about how this will look to kids decades from now. That said, some will only see these relics of technology through a Google search. So let's understand the 3D printing, which is the outcome of capturing a 3D image via a 3D scanning app or a program. Now, this is not something of the future, but it's becoming futuristic in how we use it. Now, the scope of the presentation will be on 3D scanning and not so much as 3D printing equipment options, but just giving you a bit of the history here. So digital 3D printing is a technology that's about four decades old or more at this point. Digital 3D printing and modeling plays a huge part in our ability to capture our knowledge and technology as an artifact or a physical item, one that can be flipped to see the front and back of an object that may no longer exist or is becoming the dinosaurs of our time. Summarizing technical writer Hossein Ashtari, he explains that a 3D print file is a digital file that is used to create a 3D solid object. Several sequential layers of material are laid down by the printer until the object creation is completed. Now, how cool would it be to see and touch that old camera or that rotary phone? Okay, maybe the 80 babies, maybe that's not so much a fun thing to think about, but for our kids, that would be cool to have on their desk or in the classroom. So a lot of this 3D technology, however, is seen with big box retailers to this day, such as Walmart or Best Buy. Now that we've talked about the digital 3D printing, let's talk about 3D scanning, a way to capture already existing objects or a duplicate of a duplicate. Just as we scan our paper receipts or important documents, the same concept and process applies except this is scanning a 3D object, not a 2D or 1D object. I'm all about inexpensive ways to achieve the same, so I will focus on the mobile apps options rather than the hefty resource intensive programs and pricey equipment. Excuse me. You're certainly welcome to throw all your money at it if you like, but for the rest of us non-committal types, I will walk you through how to achieve a relatively inexpensive approach to 3D printing, 3D scanning. So there are tons of apps. Most will generally have very similar functionalities at the base level. So here to the left, you see of the screen is a Google search, tons of apps. One or two actually seem to be cool for me to check out. One I thought because of the name Clone 3D Scanner, but the website goes to say it's 2 million downloads. I question that, but I digress. So the catch to this was that Google Play had it for $19.99. That's the only way you could get this app, but it was free on iOS, so go figure. So whether it's worth it depends on your plan of how you choose to use it and how frequently you want to use it. Otherwise, go with the free alternatives, such as Curie Engine that's available on iOS and Google Play. I could not figure out the Clone 3D Scanner app on my iPad, so I can't give much there, to be honest. But however, the 3D scanning app called Curie Engine, it worked for me without much of a learning curve to get started. That said, I've only managed to get maybe about 80% of my black mid-top Adidas classics replicated in this app. I'm not an expert there. And again, to be fair, this was without reading any instructions. Now, that may say something about my intelligence or the fact that the app was a lot easier than that clone app. So go figure that. My son just came home. He's all in the recording now. But with Curie Engine, you need to have good knees. They don't mention this on the website. Why would they? That's weird to say, right? But what I mean is that you can get so easily wrapped up in this. You might start thinking that you're some swanky photographer snapping every angle imaginable of your mid-top Adidas like I was. They say it's a minimum of 20 pics, but it's up to 20 per project. And I couldn't come up with 20 different angles, so I was just like, whatever. I did find that you can do a decent number of projects. However, exporting them for that particular app, there's a limit of 3 per week. Keep in mind, I'm on the cyber side, so naturally, or taught to at least, to find ways around things. So that 3-week a minimum type deal, I figured a way around it. At least on Android, you can have a slight advantage over those with iOS. There's a way to share your link, which then negates the need to export it. And if you want to share with your family and friends, that's fine. But if you try to do that same thing on iOS, you're going to be met with a QR code to download the app. Regardless of how you wish to share it, it's not going to happen. So I'm still investigating tons of apps. iOS has been my focus because a quick search brought up a ton of 3D scanning apps on the Apple Store. And where are we at? One in particular was the Room Scanner or Scannerverse. It was quite impressive, but there's so much to think about and so many apps to pick from. Just be careful, read the reviews, and try to read up on what it does. And all that aside, the reviews on the app, don't fall for that because they can be bought just as well as the download counts. Let that sink in. More on the real examples. So when we talk about how does Black Panther have anything to do with this? Well, Queen Ramonda's beautiful headpiece is a prime example of a 3D printing in cinema. This was done by a collaboration of head costume designer Ruth E. Carter and designer Julie Corner. Who would have thought your clothes could be a 3D replica? This might take the term bootlegging and boosting to a whole nother level. I'm just saying. But all jokes aside, there are tons and tons of other examples. Just do a Google search and you'll find places like the Smithsonian Museum here that's sitting right below the movie scene they are using 3D replicas of historical pieces. Now, when you go to the website, you're able to turn and manipulate these objects to view them at different angles. This is giving you the opportunity to touch art pieces that might have been behind a glass case or a static picture on the wall in the physical museum. So let's get into some survey results. Well, not a survey entirely, but it's an interesting research report that was done, and it was published on in October 2022 by Liam Sweeney and Joanne Dressel. They interviewed art directors of museums who spoke about their livelihood as a brick and mortar museum, and after having been through the pandemic closures and things like that. Essentially, they're trying to cut costs, keep their doors open, attract newer audiences, including talent, while being able to pay their staff fair wages. The survey results you're seeing on the screen, only a few I want to bring to your attention. The first is the virtual engagement. This is sitting at about 75%, and digitizing the collections is about 30%. So the virtual engagement being so high, it's interesting to see that the digitizing of the collections wasn't the same. But this is a perfect illustration of keeping a museum fully staffed with museum staff that can manage the virtual exhibits or that would know how to fix it if it were to break. And that might be more costly than anticipated. Obviously, a physical museum has its perks and has a very real place in society, but maintaining an array of items, regular staff, now along with tech-savvy staff, enough to manage the technical aspects of the exhibit doesn't seem so appealing to most art directors. But can we get the benefits of both? That's the question. Sharing a little bit about my world. My oldest, this was bringing back to the conversation about the house phone. No clue that this was what this was at the time. And it was a rotary phone until I said, pick it up. And he said, how? And it was very serious about that. My middle two younger kiddos, now high schoolers, they were just as baffled at whatever this game controller thing was. And my middle son thought it was a phone of some sort, which I can say I wasn't even sure myself how it worked or what it was. So I had no clue either. The last picture is my baby girl's amazement with the computer and more my understanding and my era, of course, but she was quite amazed at the appearance of the screen and this big box and what this disc thing was. It was just a lot of questions that I felt even more older answering. But these pictures were well before knowing anything about a pandemic. And I took the kids to this cool museum here in Frisco. It's a video game museum. And I'm not a gamer or a history buff, so it was a bit much for me, but for my taste at least. However, it was still cool to see. Of course, they saw the Roblox section and that was it. Everything was over with. We didn't care about history after that. But this is a perfect example of why it's vital that we store our technology digitally. Because pandemics, technology becoming antiquated, museum closures, supply chain issues, budget issues, you name it. There are a number of reasons why digital collections are now needed more than ever. Now let's talk about the benefits of making a 3D museum and having a digital collection. Having 3D virtual tours of an exhibit and a host of other interactive ideas can lead to less expensive alternatives, more capacity to hold more relics. And it's stored in the cloud, by the way, so more viewers of an online exhibit than the physical building could hold. Not to mention the museum isn't restricted by business hours, geographic boundaries, or the cost to house the physical items themselves. Granted, there is the cost of the cloud, but it's far less expensive than having a physical building, paying electricity, lights, gas, water, everything to maintain that building. And by the way, libraries are still needed. The most vital and beneficial of all of these benefits is that it provides a level of enrichment that would not be possible for patrons because of various constraints. Now, accessibility is not a hindrance or a hindrance of their experience, and it's all made possible because of the internet connection and the museum being online, or some version of the museum being online. To be an even greater connection, these 3D relics being printed and sent to classrooms around the world allow history to come alive, even in a homeschooling or an online environment. In closing, a museum just as you see with the Smithsonian or the video game museum I took my kids to, and many more, are all reasons to preserve what we have. That physical video game museum likely could have took a major hit because of the pandemic and the complete business closures that were happening during that time. The Smithsonian may not have taken such a great hit, at least the online side of it. The 3D scanning, digitizing it, the 3D printing can create a physical replica, giving anyone the ability to touch, feel, and experience the past without having to figure out time traveling. We can't safely time travel right now, that is. So the digital 3D scanning and printing is the best way we can bridge those gaps, whether it's technology, fashion, music instruments, game consoles, or even whole buildings. The possibilities become endless. This completes my presentation of digital 3D archival collections. Thank you.
Jane, that was awesome. Thank you for that.
Let me get this off of my screen. There we go.
So for those of you who are not aware, we are in contact with the Smithsonian and working on a project that Jane is working with one of our professors on. We'll let her talk about that at another time. But this is so awesome. And one of the things I had to ask a lot of questions on the meeting, but what she was talking about, the 3D printing, is meaning in the classroom, if the school has a 3D printer, they can use these files to actually print a replica of a chair from 1800s or a gun from, let's not use gun, but anyway, you know what I'm saying. I don't know why I thought a gun.
But from the military, a bomb. Yeah,
Yeah, but realistically, for kids to actually hold it in their hand or see a mini version of something and be able to see all the working parts and everything that could be printed up from those digitized files is an awesome concept I never even thought of. So great job highlighting that, Jane.
Thank you.
I think we'll wait on our questions unless anybody has a question that they want to ask Jane right now.
Let me ask, was I going too fast? Was that over anybody's head? I was trying to speak to a level where everybody could understand it.
No, you did great. That was an awesome presentation. Okay, well then we will move on and maybe you can let that sink in. And at the end, if you come up with any questions, I'm sure she'll be happy to answer them. We either have George or Frederick up. Taiwan is at work, so he won't be joining us. So do one of you want to volunteer or do I get to pick somebody? Oh, I love getting to pick somebody. All right, George, you're up.
I figured it was going to be me. But one is a video, so I love it.
Did I lose you?
So I'm trying to pull my minds up. It's a video.
Okay. And I always tell people this, if there's audio, make sure you share the audio. Teams is kind of funny about that.
It's not letting me I put it in the file on the presentation under my shared thing. It's not letting me pull it up. Is there any way that you might can pull it up for me? Is it not letting me pull it up on my side?
No, because I'm
on
my phone.
You mean on OneDrive?
On OneDrive, yeah. It's under my shared under.
Let me see.
Well, it's just a video, so I pre-recorded it. It's not letting me.
I can see. So you're saying I can pull it up and then share it?
Yeah.
And then you can just do it that way?
Yeah, it's on Masterclass. This is Master George Rizzo Masterclass. No, I share files.
It's in what folder?
The shared folder, under my shared folder, under presentation, and then it says.
Oh, okay.
It says George Namboy's Rizzo Masterclass.
Oh, okay. I can share it, I think.
The second one's a video. The second foot of the video. Bring on, let me.
It's in the PPTM file. Masterclass Prezo George.
Yeah. It's a PowerPoint.
Okay. Is it just gonna play or do I need to?
Once you click it, it should play. The second slide is a video.
And it's only 3 slides?
Yeah.
Is that right?
You can skip the other two. The other one's like 30 minutes. You just put the second one as the video.
Okay. Let me. And just let it play. Okay. Why is it not making it go large? Okay. Maybe that's just what it's supposed to do. It's not supposed to be that large?
No. That's
it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I need to hold on. I'm sorry. I need to hit share with audio because it's not going to do it again.
Thank you, Jane. I appreciate that.
No problem.
So what we have here is a virtual lab. So what I got going on is my different labs. You have Cali Lab, Mr. Robot, Cali Everything, Metasploitable, Windows 7, Windows XP, Red Hat Linux, Metasploitable 2, and another Cali machine. Here's a little quick process of installing. I already have one, but I'm going to go through installing Ubuntu. I never say that right, Ubuntu. I already have a Mr. Robot on here, but I'm going to go ahead and install another Mr. Robot on here just to give a quick demonstration on it. So it's importing straight from Roam Labs. So I didn't go through the whole process of showing you the download because of time, but downloaded it from Roam Labs and then Roam Hub, sorry, and then it imports straight to here. This is the Mr. Robot loading. Going through its startup process. It's pretty cool because you can do your different labs in here. You can go ahead and download some of the other labs they got in Roam Hub or create your own hacking environment. So I like it. It's pretty cool. I'm starting to learn it. I've done it for a while, but I'm trying different ways of learning it. Takes a while. Here's your Mr. Robot's screen. So they don't allow you to they don't just give you the login, so you have to kind of find the login yourself. So you got to hack the machine. So I'm going to turn this one off here, and I'm going to go to the one I already got it loaded up. I was going to show you Cali. Go ahead and download this Cali one. Well, I already got the CD downloaded. I'm going to show you the install real quick. Because you need two different virtual machines. So I already got the Mr. Robot. I'm going to add another Cali one on here real quick. I already have the CD saved. But it gives you a list of different operating systems if you want to download different operating systems to learn how to work on them as well. And this is VirtualBox. So we're going to create it from a hard disk. No, sorry, it's from ISO actually. So, but it's a virtual ISO. As you can see, I got a bunch of them. I got Windows 7. I got Windows XP Pro, Metasploitable. I got different CDs on here. So sometimes it makes it a little harder because I got to find which one's the actual CD. Some of them crash. Sometimes you get ones that never ain't any good. So I have to play with the system and figure it out. See, that one was one that wasn't really good, so I'm gonna go ahead and remove that one. So don't be scared. So if it gives you a CD that's not good, you just go and you just remove it if it doesn't install correctly. So see how quick it was to remove, delete all files. So even if you get tired of a machine, like after you've done a lab, you can just easily remove it. So I'm gonna show you the loading process real quick. Once again, find a distribution. I always second guess myself. I don't know why, so I keep going through the process of double checking and making sure everything is running smoothly or whatever. And I pre-did this. That's why you don't see me typing anything. This is recorded. So I'm just explaining the breakdown. I could have edited it down a little bit more, but I don't mind showing like the errors and stuff like that, or the working through the kinks. So I got all those CDs. All of those are ISO images or mirrored images that you can install. So I just find the one that I want. So I'm going to go off a live CD, live ISO image. There's different ways to do it. I like VirtualBox. Some people like Virtual Machine. You can still do the labs the same way. It's loading. I already got it set on my computer. So instead of going through the whole loading process, because sometimes my thinking, you know, be a little bit funny as far as the loading time. It is on the time thing here. So I'm just going to pull up one that I already got up and running. These are totally isolated from the internet. This is like internal network, and I'm going to show you that in a bit. Right now, I'm going to build a server by adding the IP address. So they don't have an IP address, so I got to link them to the same network for them both to bounce off each other. Oh, this is me playing with my font and my colors. I was also showing that on the command prompt, you can change the colors of your terminal. So if you don't like the black, you got problems with the black scene wise, you can change it to whatever color you want. You can change the font. Well, the colors that's allowed. So that's what I was showing you there. So let me see. That's me changing the network. So I did internal network, and I named it, a name, because the names have to match whenever you do the DHCP server. They have to match when you name the network. So make sure when you do that, you have the matching name for the internal network so they can find it. And this is you being able to hack safely where you're not, on the internet, you're internally. So that was me looking for the file of VirtualBox. To do so, I went C program files, Oracle VirtualBox, so the actual file where it sits at. So you add it in there. So you do change directory to the VirtualBox files. Once you do that, you're able to go ahead and add your server Right. So I'm going to go through the little, and you can follow this exact, you put exactly what I'm putting in here when you're building this. If you want to build the Mr. Robot Lab, you put exactly what I type in here. I mean, I actually, this is a IP address that you're putting for that server and for those two networks can communicate with each other, DCHP server. This is what I was talking about, where your network has to have the same name. So I put at network equals gorilla. It's a play on gorilla, but it's gorilla, like gorilla the next person. But it's a play on that. So, but you can put whatever network you want, path, patience, whatever you want to name your network, you can name it. But whatever you added here, your network has to, the name has to equal. Server IP. Your lower IP. And your upper IP. Now, so you can put this exact same thing and it'll work. And this is just for you to be able to figure out and get the login. So this ain't even you capturing the flags. This is just for you to even be able to log into that Mr. Robot Lab. So that's the cool thing about it. So you have to even hack in just to get the login. You can't just go. And this is one way you can also do NetDiscover to get the IP address to be able to log in, right? And you'll see in a second what I mean by having to get the IP address to being able to log in. Is it going to go through all this and load all this stuff? Yeah, VirtualBox management or manager. And what you're really doing is your DCHP manager, server manager. I highlight that in here too. DHCP server management. I don't know why I would say DC. I don't know why I say DCHP, but it's DHCP server management. Like I said, I already pre-did this. I recorded. I have to go through different stages. because it's a long process. So for me to cut it down, I went ahead and pre-did it so I can go ahead and pre-edit it. I mean, it's not too long of a process, but I mean, this is the Cali machine that's on the network. So that was the Mr. Robot that you saw earlier, but this is my other, this is the Cali machine, right? So right now I'm doing an IF config. Actually, it's supposed to be, I go back and I do an IP address search to make sure the address pops up. Because you want to find the whole thing in order to get into the Mr. Robot thing, you have to find the IP address. So it's not that one. So you have to find the IP address that is entailed with it, right? So this one is 110, right? So it's going to give it the IP address of 111, right? So once you figure out that IP address, you'll go into your web browser. It should be coming up in a second. I'm going to end map it as well. You want to end map. Once you find out the IP address, you're going to go ahead and do an end map too, right? And like I said, you can also do a net discover. So some people use the Sparter. The version of Kali I have on here, for some reason, does not have Sparter. I think they took Sparter out of it. You can try to add it, but sometimes you get an error. You know, I've tried to put the PHP 8 in it. I've tried everything, removing the PHP. I did an auto remove, but for some reason, I can't get the Sparta on this one. I got on one of my other Kali instances.
Was that your video or is that my network?
Yeah, I lost it too.
That's why you said I got so many different.
Okay, no, no.
There it is. Sorry.
One of the instances that has the Sparta. And there's another one that I think I was having trouble with was Armitage. I had to go and either go back to an old one or go through a whole process just to add Armitage to it. So there's a couple that after a while it gets kicked out of Cali. You see, it's on the open. It's telling you here once you do your nmap. That is on the open HTTPS, right? So there's two hosts. So there's the one that you have there, and then it has the one that Mr. Robot's on, right? Because you have two. You have yours, the Cali, and then the other only open network is your Mr. Robot. So, and you know what's open is on a website. So you go and you do a web browser search for it, since it's saying it's a web browser search. So, you know, the one that's on here is the 110, so it must have gave it none other than the 111, right? So we're going to see if it did, if it gave it the 110 or the 111. And you see I have DWP, all different types of stuff that I... So I play around with these virtual labs. So this is one of the labs that I already had on here before I did the Mr. Robot. You see, I had DVWA and all different types of stuff that I go and I play around with in this lab. So that's the good thing about these labs. You can go ahead and play around and work on different things and hone in and practice on your skills. I'm no expert to this. I'm just learning it. So I was just playing around, trying to figure it out and learn it. So that's why you see me going through a lot of bumps and bruises and all this other types of stuff, but like I said, I get to practice and learn in my own lab, in my own environment. So that's after you put in all that, you put it into the website, this is the page that'll pop up to let you know that you successfully got it. And then you have to capture three flags from here. And Vone Hub has a lot of walkthroughs for it too, so that's what's cool about the Vone Hub. They have walkthroughs for you. So it tells you to type in the different things there. You put prepare, you put F society, and it gives you different little things there, instances. But I'll let you go ahead and go do that when you get a chance and you go and do your thing, right? But let me see, I want to skip forward here a bit. I want to be able to show you. That's my dog. He ain't going to sit still, so it ain't going to be quiet. So I want to go ahead and go forward. All this. Oh, this is me showing like NetDiscover. But if you look, all right, hold on. It says NetDiscover will go through and scan the different IP addresses and stuff, but. Going through that Mr. Robot thing again. This is me trying to catch the flag, but I didn't have enough time to do all that. So I wanted to show you another thing y'all can do on here. I think I went too far. Let me see. I think this is it. So the other lab, and I don't have too much time, so I'll try to go through this as quick as I can. The other lab I went through real quick is to show you is your Metasploitable, right? So I got Metasploitable loaded on here as well, right? And I know I'm running over time. I apologize about that. I should have asked for a little more time, but my bad. But don't load to go through the process. And I can't remember exactly where I got the Metasploitable to lab from. And it's buffering through and trying to surpass the errors and stuff. Like, don't get panicked. You see an error and let it do what it's going to do. It's going to go through it. Remember, it's a vulnerable lab to begin with anyway. So it's going to go through its little process and stuff like that. But exploitable is just vulnerable. As you can see, it's Metasploitable. Once you download it, you put the regular login. The login is MSFADIM. So MSF admin, and the password is the same thing. So now I'll go here and I'm gonna bypass some of this stuff, because that was just me. That was me installing the PHP and stuff like that that I told you was missing. But let me see. PHP 8. Let's see some of the tools that's on the Kali instances. That's me going into root. What was I going into root for? Well, oh, I was checking to see if my if I had that Metis portable attached to the same same network. That's told me checking to see if it's on there.
While it's doing that, I'm gonna talk over the video a little bit. But it's just to show you, like, you can do different stuff in these labs and practice your hacking.
So here, I'm just gonna go ahead and do an MSF console to go ahead and open up to do a vulnerability test. Well, do a whole vulnerability. So now I'm at MSF6. All right. So basically, in Metasploitable, in my MSF console, and I'll put in an exploit. So I'm going to use exploit. And I'm going to tell you, and this is going to show you where you're, you, if you don't put your code in correctly, it's going to beat you down. And this was being tired, so I kept the wrong stuff. So I'm like, wow, what is wrong? What is not doing? So I had to keep going back. So pay attention, because you'll drive yourself crazy by one or two things that's off, or your spelling's off because you fast type. And I got fat fingers, so anytime I type, my keyboard's so small. Let me show you. Let me see if I can show you how small my keyboard is. This is how small my keyboard is. I don't like big, bulky keyboards, so I always do typos, and I'm just speedballing. So I got a failed because, like I said, fat fingers.
Video about to end up.
And now it should go through. Wait. What was it? Oh, no. I put P-O-L instead of P-L-O.
So, I'm tired of doing this video. But you could pause or stop the video, because I'm pretty sure everybody knows how to do the Metasploitable. But I was just showing you can have fun in these labs. Like, man, build your own virtual box or virtual machine labs, because they're fun. You can sit there and try all different, like Jay said, I'd be fussing with myself because I'll sit in there and I'm like, what am I missing? I'm missing something. What's going on?
No, your commentary after it was killing me. I'm sorry.
I love it. No, that's how I am, though. I like being able to make people laugh and stuff like that. Because you get frustrated when you're doing this thing. Don't think it's just you going there and it's easy. I edited a lot of this stuff. I mean, a whole lot of this stuff. But I'm telling you, once you learn how to do it, it's fun because you can put. I mean, Roman Hub has so many labs in there that you can do, and you're basically actually hacking. I know Hack the Box has where you're hacking or try hack me has it, but this is like you actually hacking because you got other machine. Like I got Windows 7 in here, I got Windows XP. I'm still working on Red Hat Linux because they're a little funny with their machines and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, you really want to learn to hack, just build your own virtual box. Because that's what all our labs was throughout these courses that we did, was actual virtual machines. So you can build your, I asked my instructor, I'm like, how can I build that same lab that I'm doing these courses in? He was like, well, you just got to find the vulnerable labs, put them in a virtual box, and then you can do it that way. So that's what I did. So I can practice hacking. You know what I mean? Like really, you know, somewhere hacking. But anyway, that's my freezo, whoever's next, you know, and happy holidays.
Thank you, George. That was awesome. Yeah. I loved VirtualBox when I was going through my school, and I put so many different programs on there. I had all the different Windows and Linux, and I was like, oh, I can add this, I can add that. It was totally cool.
You can take them off when you're done with them. So it's pretty cool.
No, and I want to say George is going to be one of our leads, and he's going to be heading up that, doing the VMs and stuff like that. So all jokes aside, he's learning it because he's going to be the SME of it.
Awesome. Great job. All right, Frederick, are you ready?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Let me stop sharing. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop sharing.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Okay. So I'm going to do my presentation on Cisco Packet Tracer. Unfortunately, I found out of it pretty late in my studies here, because it would have helped me out a lot earlier on in my classes. I don't have come from any IT background with my career, so I don't have any hands-on training with any of with any actual devices. So Cisco Packet Tracer has been a real help, and especially the end of my studies, really getting to know what happens when you connect devices, how things work, and really putting like a capstone on everything. It's a network simulation tool primarily used for teaching and learning. It's address mapping for IT addresses. You can set up different servers, connecting devices, and also create both the physical and the logical topologies for both of them. It allows you to learn how to set up the network without really needing to see the hardware for them, which is the best part of it. But you can actually physically see the devices, which I'll show you after I get through these slides. So you're actually plugging the cables into where they belong. And it's in a safe environment, and you can try different things to see what the result of it is. And there's no risk of breaking anything like it would be if you're just trial and error when you're in a full, when you're in a real life environment. So you're not worried about breaking hundreds of dollars of equipment when you put something in the wrong way. And one of the things that I just learned about is that you can actually see the contents of the packets being transmitted. So it's really seeing the different layers and how the packets are delivered from one end device to another. Cisco Networking Academy is where you would get it from. Skillsforall.com, a great site that I learned about through this internship. Getting started with Cisco Packet Tracer is a course which will go through all of the basics on it, and it has the download for it in there. You can just download the program by yourself and just play around with it. But the Getting Started course goes along with a whole Networking Essentials course. And they have a whole bunch of courses on there that go through all types of networking and IT stuff using Packet Tracer as the main way to go around it. This is what the main screen for Packet Tracer looks like. You have a logical. This is where the main logical desktop would be. and also as the physical one where you could see just here, we have one home city. But for the logical, I'm just going to create a small network here with, let's see here. We just do it with one switch. And so you have network devices, end devices. It has components, connectors, so all the different types of cables you would want. And in the end devices, it has everything from PCs, laptops, servers. If you wanted to learn how to connect stuff in smart homes, it has AC units, it has Bluetooth speakers, garage doors, everything. So you can create a whole smart house from here. So we're going to go into network devices and add a router. And then for end devices, we'll just use a PC, a laptop. So we'll use two laptops and a server. So for the connection types, they have the console cables and they have the regular copper straight throughs all the way to the coaxial cables if you want to put an internet location on there. So just using, when you use the regular cables, it lets you choose all of the ports that on there that you want. Or if you just use this one, it'll automatically choose whatever the best cable would be for that environment. When you click on whichever device you want to use, it shows you exactly what the device looks like. And it has all of the configurations for it. So it has the settings for the internet, the local area network, all of the wireless, or you could just use the regular graphical user interface as if you were just had the computer in front of you. Just to make it a little quicker, we'll just go into the LAN settings and just give it the default gateway, the 192.168.1.1 for the router. And it has two orange dots, which means it's not connected yet. And then the two green means it's connected. So then we go to the server and it gives you the whole picture of the server. And we'll do the same thing for the server. And it automatically gives it the subnet mask. And then we can configure the services for it. So we can put DNS on and for the DHCP to get the PCs and laptops connected. The default gateway number. And the DNS. And the starting IP address of 3. And turn it on and save. And it automatically calculates everything. If you wanted to use it from the command prompt, it's right in the same layout. It's just a little bit longer to do from the setup. So then we can connect the PC and the laptop. And then for the PC, we can just go to IP configuration on the desktop and turn on the DHCP. And the same thing for the laptop. And the only thing left is that this other laptop isn't connected to the wireless router. Because we look at it and see that it only has an Ethernet card. And this is the one thing that I really found out recently. You can change components on it. So if you turn off the power on it, you can take out the Ethernet card. And this is the wireless interface. So we can plug that right in and turn it back on. And then it connects the wireless router. And then if we go over to look at the physical view of it, when we zoom in, we can see in the corporate office, we have all the two laptops, the PC, the router, and then we go with the main wiring cabinet. It has the server and the switch all lined up here, just like it would look in a wire in a regular wiring closet. The last thing that I wanted to show you is that if we it has a simulation mode. If we went into right here, it's showing to add a simple packet. If we wanted to send a packet from this PC to this PC, and then we go into simulation mode and we hit play, it shows the path of the packet. And if we pause it, we can actually look at the packet and it shows exactly what layers it went to. And it's showing where the destination MAC address matches the receiving port's MAC address. And if you go into the inbound PDU details and the outbound PDU details, it actually shows you what the frames look like, what information is saved in the frame. And this really helped me understand like the OSI model, because it was still a little shaky on it before I was using the before I started using this program, and then it really helped me understand it a little bit better. Other than that, there's a lot of, when you do the courses on Cisco Academy, it gives you labs within this to do it, and there are certain steps you have to follow, and it grades you based on completing the steps in the right order and doing the right things. And you can do the command prompts, there's web browsers, and it's really helpful to have a safe tool to be able to practice in other than messing up on actual devices. Thank you very much.
Wow, you would never know you did not have an IT background.
Exactly. You awesome. Did an amazing job.
Man, that was really cool. I had never seen that program before.
I got sent, I started doing the one of the things that was given to me with the internship, one of the projects, and it was one of those courses, and I've been just practicing on it, and there's way more in there than I could even show, so it's a really deep dive.
Genius.
That was really great. Really great. Especially when you took the Ethernet card and put the wireless card in. That was so cool. That because you went in there, you diagnosed that it only had an Ethernet card, you were able to switch it out, and it did it exactly like it would do in real life. You know,
it has different modules. Like you could do that on the servers and on the regular computers. You could take them out and give them extra ports, like whatever. It has like the actual devices and the different Cisco routers, like all the different models of them too.
That was so cool.
That's on Cisco Academy?
Cisco Packet Tracer. Virtual environment, a virtual lab environment that you can use.
But is it on Cisco Academy, or where did you get, or could you put the link for the one where you got that one at?
Yeah, I'll give you, I'll throw the link in the chat.
All right, thank you.
All right, man, those were three great presentations, guys. I'm really impressed. Of course, this, like I said, this is like my favorite meeting of the week. Does anyone have any questions?
It's not a question. It's just to add something to Cisco Packet Tracer. It's a really great tool, but it's some kind of limitation on it. And Cisco theirself says that you can really use it for their CCNA and CCNP exam, but you don't have all the command line into the software. So when you want to do some kind of deep dive troubleshooting, it's not really the good tool. It's the good tool to learn the commands and all that. But it's always better to have an actual lab. So if you want to do really master the troubleshooting and everything, it's better to invest in a in some old hardware, Cisco equipment, and to have a physical real lab. There's another tool which is very good also. It's called EvenG. You can try to use that one too. That one, they use it. I'm actually using it for my CCNP exam, and it includes on not only the Cisco equipment, but you can also add other type of equipment, by example, for the gate firewalls, virtual machine, VMware, and all that inside. So it's just a contribution to your work. Very good work, and thank you.
Can you add that link in the chat as well?
Yeah, I can add that. I can add EvenG. You have an EvenG, you have Boson software. Also, they have a very good lab too.
That's awesome. How about anyone else? Any questions, any comments? All right, everybody's ready for the weekend, I guess, to finish out the week.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, well, we can go ahead and wrap it up. I want to thank our presenters for tonight and all of you that have joined. I probably should have mentioned this earlier. If you didn't clock in, make sure you put your time card corrections in. I totally forgot to mention that at the beginning, but thank you all, and have a happy holiday. And as always, we're here if you need us, right? Just to chat away. Have a good night and happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
Marcia.
Yes.
When you stop the recording, or you want me to stop the recording?
I'll stop it right now. I was just about to.
Okay.